Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork. But somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, mine starts here.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, let's get going here for a Monday. It's going to be a busy Monday, too. We already have some Cardinals trade news to start the afternoon. Then I'm going to argue with Ethan over the Odyssey, I have a feeling. But good afternoon, everyone. Sue, how are you this afternoon?
I'm great, thank you.
Doing okay?
Yeah, it was a hot walk at Forest Park. I didn't think it was supposed to be that hot. I guess it's humid.
Yeah, I think it is like upper 80s again, right?
Yeah.
After Saturday was weird because it was like this light drizzle.
Yeah,
like the lightest rain you could possibly
like a misty,
but like almost, it felt like it was like half the day.
Yeah. Yes.
It wasn't like for a an hour. All day, it was like that.
Well, weird. That's why it was a perfect day for me to go see the Odyssey, and I'll return to that in a second. But let's talk. We've been kind of waiting today. The big news from the weekend was Tarek Skubal from the Tigers going to the Dodgers. You know, the Habs get more. I guess that's what happened. So we've been waiting all day today about the Cardinals to see whether or not they were going to move anyone. And Ethan, about an hour ago, we got our first moves, right? First significant moves. And what's unique about this is that Chaim Bloom has chosen to trade within the division. He sent Jojo Romero and Dustin May to the Brewers, right?
Yes, he did, and this was confirmed by Ken Rosenthal, as you mentioned, just about an hour ago. We had to wait a little while to hear what exactly the return was going to be. But who other than KD Wu to break the news? Class A outfielder Alexander Frias and AA outfielder Josiah Ragsdale are the two prospects coming back to St. Louis. They are both in the top 15 of the Brewers system. Both have hit very well at their respective levels this year. Frias in single A has an OPS around 950, I believe, and then Ragsdale over 1,000 this year. So these guys hit the ball really well. The Cardinals need more outfield depth in their system, and when you think about it, I'm sure we're going to get a lot more, you know, breakdown from Frank Cusimano and then Scott Warman later in the show on this, but the Cardinals got Jojo Romero for Edmundo Sosa, if you remember that name. They signed Dustin May to a one-year $13 million contract in the offseason. Chaim Bloom has turned those two pieces into two very respectable prospects that at least one of them will go immediately into our top 10, maybe both of them. So I consider this, you know, at least in the moment, a pretty solid trade for the Cardinals.
So it's funny. A few weeks ago, Fred, you'll find this, I think, interesting. When we were playing the Brewers, Dustin May was pitching and really doing well against them. And one of my former colleagues from up there used to work at WKTI and WTMJ, my former station up there, Gene Miller. He's a legend in Milwaukee radio. He texted me the day that was happening, and he said, let's see here, because I got to look at the right text string. Why is it that the guy pitching for your Cardinals, who looks like he slept under a railroad trestle last night, is shutting out my Brewers through four innings? Please explain. And I said, well, I'm at the game. I can't really explain it. But I said, he's our only trade bait. So I sent Gina a text a little while ago. I said, you willed him, because he was talking about Dustin May. Said, you willed him to the crew. And, you know, with the Cardinals not really being playoff bound anymore, I can root for Milwaukee because my wife is from there and I had some ties to the team. But we still think there's going to be more action maybe this afternoon. Look, the name that's been mentioned most with the Cardinals right now is maybe Alec Burleson and his bat, right?
There's been some talks about some interest on the market with him. And here's the good thing about a guy like Alec Burleson is the Cardinals don't have to trade him unless they get an offer that really wows them. He's only 27 years old. He'll be 28 this November. They have him locked up through the 2028 season, so he's not a free agent until 2029. So that does overlap with the timeline for when they want to be competing again. So you're in no position where you need to trade him, but there are some areas of need within the organization, and if you think that you could get a really good return for him, then maybe it's worth looking into.
All right, well, we'll keep you posted on that. We have Leland Vittert, News Nation host. He hosts On Balance with Leland Vittert. Every weeknight, he's coming up here for some takes on Washington and politics. Joe Nocera was scheduled last week. I'm really looking forward to speaking with Joe. He writes at the Free Press, and he wrote about data centers and the data center war. And I think a lot of people are, I think a little intimidated by some of that stuff, confused. I think Joe's going to lay it out here for us this afternoon. We have Josh Hammer coming up a little bit later as well. Kusumano will be here, as Ethan indicated, with some breakdowns of what happened not only over the weekend, but the trade deadline. And then former Senator Lampring, who will be with me, he was here with us on Friday for the roundtable. He's going to spend some quality time with me tomorrow night in the studios. We host election night. We're finally here to the primary day. And there's some national races that are of interest, too. And Fred, I know you've pulled some audio today from the Michigan race, which the Democrat primary is pretty intense right now with El Sayed and Haley Stevens. They're both nut jobs and would have to take on Mike Rogers, the Republican. But the Democrats are polling, relatively tight with Mike Rogers right now in that particular Senate seat. So that's a big one. The other thing is, I saw this morning. Look, I've been talking about this for a few weeks now. Cori Bush is back on the ballot against Wesley Bell. They did a story on Fox today, kind of seeing, focusing on the DSA candidates, whether or not that could happen here in the middle of the country. So we'll get into that this afternoon. But let me start it this way. Sue, I'm rewatching Seinfeld, right?
Yeah, and I kind of love that.
And it's really been fun. And so the episode that I watched last night, did you ever see the movie The English Patient?
Yeah, but a long time ago.
Right. And did you like it or did it bore the hell out of you?
Well, I'm a chick, so I believe there was a love story in there.
Me. Yeah, bored the crap out of me.
I kind of liked it, but
see,
it went on.
I was in the camp that hated it.
Of
and
course.
I'm like, what are you talking about? So Elaine was on my side. I'm just going to have this as a little quick remembrance. Here we go.
What is everyone talking about? The English Patient. It's so romantic. God, that movie stunk.
I kind of liked it.
No, you didn't.
Clay, did you just see The English Patient?
Didn't you love it?
No.
How could you not love that movie?
How about it sucked?
That is so funny. Now, let me just say this. The Odyssey didn't suck, but it has got to be one of the, if not the most overpraised movies in the history of Hollywood. All right, I finally took my 3.5 hours out of my day on Saturday afternoon to hear the loudest movie I've ever heard in my life, where I can't hear a lot of the dialogue because it's so loud. I see Matt Damon going out on a ship, and then he goes out on a ship again, and the crew dies, and then the crew lives. There's some cool water scenes out there.
Wait, the crew dives and lives?
Well, some of them die and some live. Don't you not know the poem?
Oh, yeah.
You have to know the poem. And there was a cool scene. I like the scene with the big cyclops and the giant. That was kind of fun with the sheep. But my goodness, this movie bored the living crap out of me for the most part. It's not close to being the best Chris Nolan film. I've got a category of movies I'll toss out here in a second once Ethan tells us how he all glommed onto the hype and likes this movie. Because, oh my God, I know it's going to win every award possible, but in my mind, Samantha Morton, who played Circe, the witch, was the only good acting performance in the entire movie. And then, here's my other favorite. 4 days after seeing Tom Holland as Spider-Man, I got to see him play Spider-Man in this movie because there is literally zero differentiation between the way Tom Holland plays Spider-Man and the character in The Odyssey. And I would say the same thing for Jon Bernthal. I got to see Spider-Man and Jon Bernthal together like I did last Tuesday, and it was the same stuff. So, Ethan, you can tell me how much you love this movie. For those people who haven't seen it, I guess I would say at least see it in the IMAX because it's meant to be seen in the IMAX. You won't be able to understand some of the dialogue because it's drowned
so
out.
So loud?
By, oh my God, yeah. The editing was sloppy. I caught at least two bad edits, which if you're going to slice this in film, you better have a better editor. So there you go. There's my review of The Odyssey. It didn't suck, but oh my God, it was so, like after 2 hours, I'm like, let's get over with this thing.
To your surprise, I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was really good. I'm not going to act like I, you know, professionally review movies or anything like that, but I thought that I agree there were parts that the score kind of drowned out the dialogue. So I will back you.
Wow,
I will back
that's annoying.
I wouldn't say it was throughout the entirety, but there were moments where it was you really had to focus in on what you were trying to hear. I thought that most of the acting performances were really good. I thought Anne Hathaway was exceptional. I thought that Matt Damon did pretty darn well in the role. I agree Tom Holland was fine in the role. Samantha Morton was amazing. I thought that I really enjoyed the back and forth between them telling this story as Odysseus is trying to find his way back home. It's not as if it's all in a linear timeline of this is what happened and then this is what happened. You have this back and forth.
I didn't mind the narrative. Yeah,
the fall of Troy, and then this part was him trying to make his way back home. I thought it did a really good job of explaining it all out. I thought the writing with Athena, I thought Zendaya did a really good job as Athena. I thought that was really creative. I really liked it. I thought that the action scenes were extremely entertaining. Cyclops was awesome. The giants were really entertaining. The battle scene at the end I thought was pretty cool. I thought it was really good. Yeah. I enjoyed this movie, and it's up to this point, it's my movie of the year.
As Ethan said, or as Elaine said, I'm sorry, you're wrong. Okay, that's what I'll say. I started thinking about some
movies. I guess the entire country is wrong.
And, you know, I'm going to compare this to the U2 show at Sphere. Everyone thought they were so cool because they got to see the show at Sphere, and it wasn't that good. Same thing with this movie. It is so overpraised. Let me offer you a list of movies that are a lot better than this movie, okay? And a couple of them are Chris Nolan movies, like The Dark Knight and Oppenheimer.
Yeah, I would agree both of those were better.
The Shape of Water, much better movie.
Oh my gosh, that's a good movie.
Spotlight, much better movie. Argo, much better movie. The King's Speech, these are all Oscar winners. Much better movie. No Country for Old Men, much better movie. The Lord of the Rings, much better movies. Gladiator, much better.
You just
Braveheart.
Named some of the best movies of all time.
And this is not in that category, is my point.
Okay,
this
but it not can still be a
no
good
one
movie.
Is going to sit there. Okay, it's a good movie. But who's going to sit there in their house? You're going to sit there and watch that 3 hours in your house again?
I don't know.
No, you're
all
not.
All I'm saying
you
is
are
I thought
never
going to
watch this
movie
again. And all the other movies that I just listed, Schindler's List, I can say Dances with Wolves, Platoon, Amadeus, they're all movies that we want to watch again. This is not a film. You're going to go, you're going to check it off your list. Oh my God, I'm so impressed with Chris Nolan, Matt Damon, stabbing people, and you're never going to watch it again. First of all, if you tried to watch it again, your household, who's not watching again, would tell you to turn the damn thing down because it's so loud. And then you'd say, but I have to turn it loud because I can't hear the dialogue. That's what you'd have to do. We're off and running on a Monday.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork, but somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
We had Jonah Sarah scheduled for last week. He is a senior editor with the Free Press. He wrote about data centers and kind of said, he positioned it this way, a peace plan for the data center wars. A lot of that going on around here. But he had to cancel, I think it was a dentist-related issue, but he's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We got a Monday edition of Sue's News coming up. I have a few things that happened over the weekend outside, Sue, of the Odyssey that I will share as good. Well as we're here into this week of the election. We've got the big primary tomorrow, and I'll be hosting the coverage tomorrow night with former State Senator John Lamping, who's also going to give us a preview a little bit later this afternoon, right after 5. Leland Vittert back with us, News Nation host. His show On Balance with Leland Vittert airs weeknights at 8 p.m. Central Time. Leland, welcome back. How are you this afternoon?
Great to be with you.
I saw, I don't know how much you were paying attention because I was getting ready for the show. So I saw President Trump a little earlier on the topic of Iran. He said nothing gets through to Iran unless we wanted to, and nothing will get through unless a deal or total surrender is accomplished. Now, we've been hearing that now for weeks. We keep hearing him say they're not going to get a nuclear weapon. I think we're all pretty clear on that particular point. But are we still in a war with Iran, and what's going on? People don't even seem to be talking about it anymore.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, which is people don't seem to be talking anymore, but people are feeling it and people are angry about it. And the other thing President Trump said is this was their last warning, right? Because he had called off attacks over the weekend that were designed to be much more significant than anything we had seen, probably getting the Israelis involved again, and then he called everything off. And he said this is their final warning. And even as you watch the Oval Office press conference, the press pool that had been allowed in, the question didn't come from NBC or ABC or one of the traditional media outlets. It came from a very favorable Trump organization, Trump favorable news organization, said, why should anybody believe you this time? And I think the biggest problem for President Trump when it comes to Iran right now is a credibility gap, because what he says doesn't seem to mean anything anymore.
I agree, and that's part of the problem. So last week, let me go to an issue that I think you wrote about and talked about. Hamas says that they're going to put their guns away and give up control of the Gaza Strip if Israel withdraws from the area. Well, the reality of the situation is, and you said Hamas agreeing to disarm is like Iran agreeing to reopen the Strait of Hormuz and hand over all their nuclear dust. It's just not going to happen, right?
Right. These things are wonderful if they were true, but they're not true, and they're not happening, and that is a continual problem for President Trump, that he seems to so badly want things to be true. He wants whatever the Iranians say or Hamas says to be true. That doesn't make it so. And this is the problem, right? Is that in the past for President Trump, he says, you know, we're going to take over Greenland. And then the European Union goes, okay, don't take over New Greenland, but NATO is going to agree that the U.S. can have bases there. Okay, fine. He moves on to something else. That's fine when everyone wants to move on. With the issue of Iran, everybody else has a veto, and therein lies the big problem, is that Iran has a veto over President Trump's approval rating right now, and that is a problem.
So what do you think is going to happen around the country tonight? Look, we have a race here between Cori Bush and Wesley Bell. And, you know, I think Wesley is the favorite as the incumbent, but you cannot count out Cori as a DSA-endorsed candidate. You have the situation going on with El Sayed and Haley Stevens in Michigan. That's an interesting race to watch. But you've seen all these DSA candidates, Leland, kind of take off nationally in a Democrat primary. You can't rule Cori Bush out here tomorrow. So I think that in and of itself might be pretty interesting to watch, see what happens.
Unquestionably. Also, Abdu al-Sayed in Michigan. The story of Democratic Socialists, borderline communists, whatever you want to call them, taking over the Democratic Party, is one that has happened, right? I watched Joe Manchin on Sunday. This is the former Democratic senator from West Virginia, trying to explain why the old guard Democrat still was relevant and existed. They don't. They are now homeless. In the same way, traditional, you'd probably call them rhino Republicans, kept warning about what would happen if Donald Trump took over the Republican Party. It's happened. That is now gone. My question is whether those two groups, sort of the non-MAGA Republicans and the non-socialist Democrats, are going to decide to team up. and create some kind of third party in the center of America.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I mean, we talked about that for a while. I do think that there is desire for something different from a lot of people. It's just, you know, manifesting that in a way that could really be, you know, realistic, I guess I would say. Leland Vittert is here on 97.1 FM Talk. All right, so Leland, we do this great segment. We started a few months ago. It's really kind of mind-blowing. George Rosenthal, who's a client of a company here called ThrottleNet, we do this thing on Tuesdays called Tech Talk Tuesday. And a lot of the topic, as you might be, you know, guessing, is about AI. So this is a headline from one of your war notes. Another 9/11 will happen, and you think it's going to be based on what happens with AI. I'm in the camp that is scared to death of this stuff. I really am. I've been kind of warning about it for years, and I'm very concerned about what happened. We know when AI went rogue a couple of weeks ago, things kind of got out of control. George comes out and talks about that. But this stuff with AI, do we have or are we having enough conversations about the implications of this?
Well, we're having a lot of conversations. The problem is they're the wrong conversations. I know you were talking about data centers coming up, which is what we're talking about tonight. Democrats have decided that AI and data centers are an open door for them for 2026 and 2028. Already, Tallarico in Texas, Sherrod Brown in Ohio are up with ads warning of data centers and how Democrats are, or Republicans are allowing data centers. Democrats are going to crack down on them. Never mind that building data centers creates an enormous amount of jobs. Opposing data centers is like opposing Walmart 30 years ago. You can do it, but it ain't not going to change anything.
Right.
This
That's
is
a good
the problem,
analogy.
Though, is that it handcuffs America. Opposing data centers handcuffs America in its fight against China, which we are in a fight, and it does nothing to protect us from the actual dangers of AI. It is the worst of both worlds.
Well, and that's why I'm looking forward to talking with Joe here in a few minutes, because, yeah, it's always, and we've had these, you know, fights erupt around here in St. Charles, down, I think even in Festus in Jefferson County. But people, I don't even know if people don't know why they don't want them, but they don't want them. And it's a, you know, it's a NIMBY issue. So I don't know how this is going to get solved. I know you're talking about Tallarico in a big state like Texas, but we're still talking about like urban data centers here in St. Louis. It's confusing to a lot of people, but I think because of the negativity and the negative press, the instinct for everyone is to say, oh, we don't like data centers, right?
That is now the instinct, right? And the power costs have now been made not to be an issue because data centers use so much power, they have to create their own. They can't get it from the grid. The water thing is absurd because they use about the same amount of water, four or five swimming pools a year. Who cares? It's a NIMBY thing, but it's one of those, like, I don't like the man. Somebody's making money. People are losing their jobs. I think if you talk to people, why don't you like data centers? It's one of those, everyone's against, but nobody can explain why.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's kind of my instinct, and that's why I wanted to have Joe on the show, and he's coming up here in a couple of minutes. What else is on your show tonight that you want to talk about? Anything?
We're talking about that. We're also talking with Bill O'Reilly tonight about a little bit what you were talking about the socialist issue. But are Republicans being too Pollyanna? President Trump out today saying, you know, the real poll numbers have me way up. Everybody's so happy. I'm wondering who he's polling other than a couple of folks that are working for him at the White House, because Republicans are unable now to say publicly, we've got real problems on affordability, on inflation, whatever you want to call it, and on the economy because of how angry people are for fear of upsetting Donald Trump. And that's going to be a real problem come the midterms, because Trump is unable to campaign right now in swing states. And even in Ohio, Sherrod Brown is up significantly.
I retweeted Matt Walsh earlier today. He said, grocery prices are insane. They're still rising. Addressing this problem should be the number one priority of every elected leader. End the stupid foreign wars and focus on this issue. It's one of the main reasons socialists are gaining power. So, and he even says, reading the comments here to see the number of conservatives angrily insisting that rising grocery prices aren't actually a problem is just stunning in a level of suicidal idiocy. Look, I'm still, you know, talking about the gas prices because we were told that the gas prices would be back by now. They're not. And the American people know this. So I think we're kind of stuck here, Leland, and I'm concerned about that. And I think you're right. I think the president's listening to the people closest to him. The reality of the situation hopefully will not be too dark at the ballot box for Republicans, but we're about to find that out. Thanks a lot for joining us. As always, we'll watch the show tomorrow night. Thank you, Leland.
All right, good being with you.
Take care.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork, but somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Well, big primary day tomorrow. We're going to get a little preview of the ballot issues and the candidates with former State Senator John Lamping. John was on the roundtable on Friday. He'll join me a little after 5. He's also going to join me in the studio tomorrow night as we kind of handle the returns that will come in between about 7 and 10 with a lot of focus here on our primary in Missouri with county executive races in St. Charles County and St. Louis County, a bunch of the constitutional amendments to run some of those down and guide you through all that. Many of you already voted. You can do early voting. I'm going to go tomorrow morning, Sue, because I have not voted yet, so I'll vote in person tomorrow. Jonas Serra is back with us, senior editor with the Free Press. He wrote a great piece last week about data centers and maybe having a peace plan for the data center wars. We've had a lot of those around St. Louis. Joe, welcome back. How are you this afternoon?
I'm good. I just heard that ad, that political ad,
yes,
where data centers are part of it. Wow.
I know. We've had a couple around here. That was an ad for someone who's running for St. Charles County Executive. It's a little bit on the, you know, the outer edges of our listening area right now. Not really. It's a big part of the listening area. It's a big county, St. Charles County, next to St. Louis County. But we've had these things bubble up. And quite candidly, I've been confused about a lot of the opposition. It's interesting. I think in one area of the piece that you wrote on the Free Press, somebody or you kind of compared this to the freakout that people had like 15 years ago about fracking. Right. So what is all the fear about with data centers, and is it warranted? I think that's really the part I want to focus on.
Well, a couple of things to keep in mind. First of all, they've been building data centers for 20 years. When you talk about what the cloud is, where your photographs are and so on and so forth, they're in data centers. So data centers themselves aren't particularly new. What's new is that with AI, excuse me, one second. With AI, the data centers are much bigger, and they require a lot more land, and there are a lot more issues around them. So, for instance, in the early stage, in the early rounds of AI data centers, they were often too close to communities.
Mm-hmm.
They emitted noise. They were ugly. They grabbed water from the community to cool, and they caused people's electric bills to go up. All of that is absolutely true, and there's no question that that's what caused people to get mad, and that people had every right to get mad. And they also, you know, I won't say they snuck into the community, but they certainly didn't want people to know they were buying the land, because if you knew that Google or Meta is buying land, the price of the land is going to go up, obviously. But a lot, I think, with the resistance, the fierce resistance by so many people has caused the data center world to take another look at their approach and to realize that they really can't continue to run roughshod over communities and expect to be able to keep building data centers. So, they've had to, in many ways, change their ways. And in other ways, the technology, the construction technology has improved. Now, what hasn't happened is that people who are opposed to data centers, there's a gap now between what people think data centers are and what they are in the process of becoming. And that gap has not been bridged.
So you offer this example of Kevin O'Leary, the Shark Tank guy, who was trying to put one of these things up in Texas. And you know, this is, again, where I think people assume things that are going to happen. But he was pitching this as something that won't emit noise. The water will be used that is recycled via something called the closed loop system. We have something even in downtown St. Louis where they're trying to use the closed loop water to have an urban data center. Maybe, Joe, you can even explain the difference between the urban data centers and the ones in the rural area. But basically, anything that people in Texas might have been concerned about with this data center really should have been put aside because the concerns were sort of answered, right?
Well, actually, first of all, it's in Utah, so let me just say that. And reason that matters is because it's in a very largely empty county. So it's in this county. So even though it's a giant data center, it is
no one would really see it.
Really not. Yeah. Right. It's really not near anything, so you're not going to hear any noise. They're pulling their electricity from a natural gas pipeline, so there's no electricity issues, and they're using this closed-loop recycled water system so that they're really not using much more water than a golf course uses in the course of a year. So it's a much better deal. And here's the most important part. The community has negotiated, you know, a taxes that they will get from this that will really help out. So compare it. A really good example of a data center that people are not upset about is Richland Parish in Louisiana, where the money that's being paid by the data center to the parish has allowed the parish to give every teacher a $50,000 bonus.
Wow, that's significant.
So when you do things like that, a lot of the anger towards data centers go away. And that's another good comparison with fracking. One of the reasons there isn't so much anger about fracking is because a lot of people who own the land or are in those communities are making money. They're getting money, whether it's tax money or royalties or whatever. And that makes a huge difference. And you don't want to see these multi-billion dollar corporations walk into your community, you know, take this land, build this data center, and not give anything back. That really, really angers people, and with good reason.
And it should, yeah. And then the other thing is, you know, one of the things that's popped up here in the St. Louis area, and I think you addressed this in the column, is some of this has been done so secretly, and there have been some NDAs and all that stuff that people are like, wait a second, what's going on here? So even if it's not something that's negative or nefarious or anything else, when you're covering it up and you're making it seem like it might be, perception is the reality.
100%. And the big tech companies that are building these data centers, they're just going to have to get used to the idea that they are going to have to pay more for the land, because it is unseemly to tell local officials that they have to sign NDAs in order to know what's going on. It's just you just can't do that,
right?
Because the minute you do that, the first public meeting you have, everybody is going to be angry and shouting, and why do you have these NDAs, and how dare you do this, and you just can't do that.
Yeah, you quote this guy, Saul Levin, who says the richest companies in the history of the world are showing up in small towns and saying, F all of you, all your city councilmen have signed NDAs, and we're building this thing no matter what. That's not the best approach, as we've discovered. Why anyone thought that would be a good approach, I'm not sure, because that was handicapped poorly, right?
Well, you know, the thing about it is big tech has a history, long before data centers, of you know, just acting first, you know, what is it? Not, they don't ask for permission. They just do it. And
it's easier to apologize than to ask permission, I think, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, now you're in this situation where they need the communities to buy into this stuff. They can't just run roughshod over these places. And I think they're learning that the approach that they took in terms of taking your data and your privacy, getting rid of your and all that stuff, it doesn't work with data centers. They can't. They have to be a little humbler, and they have to be more willing to share the bounty.
Yeah, I just, again, I'm very curious to maybe we'll never know why they didn't understand that going in with a different approach would benefit them in the long run. But, you know, the other thing, and I think you addressed this at the end of the piece where you say, you know, there's some people out there that thinks that China is funding the anti-data center activism. But you're like, well, look, if teachers are getting $50,000 bonuses, can't be all bad, right?
Right. I mean, that's what you're right. Right. The China can fund anything they want. But if the data centers are giving people $50,000 bonuses, it's not going to make a damn bit of difference.
Nope, you're right. Joe Nocera, great to have you on, as always. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. Okay, this is new. Fred just put this in. I just have to check it out since I am an Aaron Rodgers fan. And Sue, you should be too since he's on the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I absolutely
now.
Am.
Right. So he's on with Pat McAfee talking about Dr. Fauci. Okay, I know nothing more about this, but here you go.
Kind of view this year versus maybe the years of the past.
Now I'm going to plead the fifth.
Okay.
Okay. Like gotta that. Love that guy.
Okay.
Like that absolute coward, Tony Fauci.
Way to stand on your truth throughout the entirety of that thing.
Oh, I feel great about it.
Congratulations.
Yeah, you should.
I feel great about it.
Congratulations.
Yeah. I told you I'd be on the right side of history.
Yeah, well, you know what? He did, didn't he? And I'll tell you what, he took a lot of grief for that, where his positions were
Of
course he did.
Yeah.
And it was just utterly some of the stuff, you know, for a guy like him in particular, you're like, wait, we've been more than vindicated here, like way more than vindicated. And it still is an issue out there where you have all the liberal media heaping praise. Here, listen to this.
Republicans cherry-picking parts of Fauci's diaries to pose for cameras while screaming vulgarities at a man who spent a career trying to save American lives.
Brian Moreno's target in that hearing today was a man who has done more in service to this country and the world than every senator in that room and the entire current United States Senate combined.
Oh, my God. Lawrence O'Donnell.
What?
He just makes me want to pee. Look, it's utterly ridiculous. They want to cover for him. I mean, that's what they do. One of the reasons that we never really heard the truth and why Aaron Rodgers was on the outside of all this controversy is because, well, the sports media is amongst the worst, but that's MS now. They're never going to criticize their hero, Dr. Fauci, right? That would be something that would be impossible. So it continues to be an embarrassment on the part of the left-wing media, but that's what they do. Now, on the topic of the DSA, let me touch on this. We'll have Senator Lamping on after 5 o'clock. I don't know, and political predictions are really tough. I'll make some here that will probably be wrong after 5 o'clock. But there does seem to be a feeling that it's not impossible for Cori Bush to beat Wesley Bell in this primary tomorrow. So we even got a little bit of national coverage on this with Bill Malusian covering it over at Fox today, because this is something I've been talking about now for weeks. Is there a window with all this DSA stuff? They're getting a lot of attention. Can Cori beat Wesley?
So we've seen these socialist candidates racking up wins in really deep areas like New York. But the question obviously has been, can they take that extreme far left agenda and make it work in the middle of the country and middle America per se? We're going to get an answer to that question tomorrow night in the state of Missouri.
That's so I don't think it's necessarily going to happen. But I think there's a window. There's a chance. And this is really all about turnout. Who's going to show up tomorrow?
Incumbent Democrat Congressman Wesley Bell is going to be trying to defend his seat against the DSA endorsed Cori Bush. She is the former squad member that Bell actually beat back in 2024. It's both of them are going to be going head to head for the Democratic nomination for that seat. Now, this is also going to be a litmus test for whether or not a Democrat can win a Democratic primary if they're pro-Israel these days. Bell has been a supporter of Israel, while Bush has been a harsh critic and has actually called for ending all funding to the Jewish state.
So we knew that about Cori, and that's not anything new. That was certainly a part of the campaign a couple of years ago. It ended up in Wesley's favor. I don't know about this time, but here's Bill Maher's message to the DSA candidates, which, you know, he's the only one, or is one of the few people on the left that's kind of speaking out loud about this, because he is not down with communism.
Okay, I'm just going to say it. Since the far left, the far, far left, is overwhelmingly made up of affluent, ultra-woke white people, you raised your kids wrong. You told your precious brats that every brain fart was genius, and now those brain farts are becoming Democratic Party policy.
I think he kind of nailed it here. I think that is what's happening.
Tommy's aide, his top aide, Sia Weaver, said, if you don't believe in the government's sacred right to seize property, it's over, and impoverish the white middle class. What? That's a goal? You know you're supposed to scare people into voting for you, right?
It is kind of amazing what people think that they're going for and supporting and what actually, you know, is at play here.
One of the new soon-to-be Democratic congresspeople, Darlizia Chevalier, supports seizing all properties from landlords and said, seize the means of production. Mandami has said the end goal is seizing the means of production. I think they want to seize the means of production. Now, maybe you missed that in school or missed school altogether, but that's communism.
So, you know, what's interesting about that is Bill's actually doing the job that the legacy media won't do on the left, the New York Times and the Washington Post, et cetera.
Yes.
Because, you know, they talk about these candidates and they, you know, give some background, but they don't talk about the extreme nature of their viewpoints. You know, if you read a print story about some of these candidates, even if you go up to Michigan with El Sayed, you're basically getting a very, you know, whitewashed, sanitized version of who these candidates are. And Bill Maher's like, look, this is who they're all about. This is what they're about.
The coalition within the DSA called the Marxist Unity Group is in ascendance. And I must take them at their word when their words include, our commitment is to the long-term struggle for a fully liberated, classless society, in a word, communism. What do they have to do? Tweet out, elect more communists? Oh, yeah, Sia Weaver did that. Yes. Good, I'm glad you're shocked. People gotta realize this is going on.
Yeah, I really genuinely think Bill was encouraged that the audience was a little horrified, because sometimes you'll say something and you'll get applause and you're like, wait, what are you cheering for? So he is not cheering for communism, and I'm not either. So I give Bill Maher some credit for standing out there where a lot of Democrat candidates will not do that right now.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork. But somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.